Welcome to the Exploring Washington State podcast. Here's your host, Scott Cowan.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. This is Scott. Glad you're here listening to the Exploring Washington State podcast with us again this week. My guest is John Furness, otherwise known as the Blind Woodsman. John and his wife, Annie, live in Washougal, Washington. Try to say that two times fast. And John has an amazing story that he shares with us here in this episode. I think you're going to enjoy it. I find it fascinating when people overcome challenges in their lives and go on and make contributions. John and Annie both are wonderful people. We had some challenges getting this episode scheduled, and they were great to work with. And I really like their work. I really like his woodworking. I really like her art. And I just think you guys are going to enjoy this episode. So I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to let John talk. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Do us a favor, like it in whatever podcast player you're listening to us on. Please, if you can, give us a review, share it, help us get the word out about all the great things going on here in Washington State. Our guest today is John Furness, otherwise known as the Blind Woodsman, on TikTok, Instagram, everywhere social. And we stumbled across John because of you have 500,000 followers on TikTok.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Good for you.
I can't hardly believe it, honestly, really. We've been on TikTok basically for about a year. I mean, a little more than that, but like seriously on TikTok for about a year now. We actually just yesterday was a 1 year anniversary of the last art fair we ever went to, which was one that Annie and I actually put on. Just the two of us arranged it and put it on and everything. We planned it we came up with the idea like the beginning of December, and then February 8th, that same, you know, time period, just right, you know,
a couple months later.
Yeah. And it was a huge success.
Awesome.
Tons of people came. Every artist that was there said it was basically one of the best shows they've ever done financially and socially. It was a good send off, so to speak, because we're not going to do those anymore, really.
Okay. Well, before we start, you know, I kind of jumped the gun with the whole TikTok thing.
Oh, yeah.
So before we get started, why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about you and Annie?
Okay.
And then we'll work our way around the conversation, as I always do.
Yeah. All righty. My name's John Furness, and I am married to Annie. She's my wonderful wife. We're both artists. I'm a woodworker. Annie is also an artist, and she does practically everything. She was a photographer when we first met. She's done fiber art, paintings. She's painted since she was a teenager, I think. And she just started doing sculptures, really cool little clay sculptures that she paints also.
Okay.
And we live up here in Washington. I fell in love with Washington the first moment my foot hit the ground here. There's just something magical about it. I don't know how to describe it.
Well, what brought you to Washington?
Well, what first brought me to Washington actually was the Emil Fries School of Piano Technology for the Blind, otherwise known as the Piano Hospital. And it closed down, unfortunately, about 4 years ago. And it had actually been there since 1939, had students from all over the world, literally. I'm still friends with a guy from South Africa that was there when I was. We still communicate every now and then. He lives in Bloemfontein, South Africa.
And if my memory serves me, that school was in Vancouver, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Vancouver, Washington, basically just over the bridge from Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Just over the Columbia. So I came up here to do that, and really leading up to that, I really struggled trying to find employment because I'm a I'm a blind guy that has basically no computer skills, but I'm really good with my hands. But more often than not, that kind of a job can have its dangers. And so nobody will hire me. And then I heard about that. And so I was working on my woodworking skills. I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but that's fine woodworking and an interest in that. And also my friend that taught me that, he told me about the school. And working on pianos other than tuning is fine-tuned woodwork. I mean, other than tuning and stringing anyway. But so that's what really got me interested. And it's specifically for the blind. It was only, for the blind. So I decided to come up here. And it was great. I loved it. And Annie and I actually met at that school in 2012. She was painting a piano for, it was a fundraiser, and they did it every year, and they'd have some volunteer artists come in and paint pianos, and then they would be set out just on the sidewalk in different places for people to play, and then there's a donation bucket and stuff. And she happened to be painting a piano in the same room that I was working in. I was working on a different piano anyway. And I go in there, and of course, the very first thing I do is put my hand on the wet paint like an iron filing to a magnet.
Oh, no. that's not good.
Well, luckily, she was just priming. I didn't like stick my finger up Mona Lisa's nose or something like that.
Okay. So,
and, we were working in that same room and got to talking and really started to hit it off. And she called me for the first date, because I'm like George McFly when it comes to women, tell the truth. And when she called, I didn't really know what to do, because I was broke. I didn't have a penny to my name at the moment, so I didn't know what to do. And I told her I was busy and I would call her back. And at the time, I had a garden plot at the community center that you can rent them here. And I had this huge patch of peas that needed to be harvested. And so I called her up and asked her if she wanted to pick peas. And we went and talked for hours in the garden till sunset. And we even got married in front of that same garden plot 3 years later.
That's a great story.
So it was
a great story.
It was cool. And I did the piano stuff for, I went there for 2 years, and then I rebuilt pianos for 2 years. And it got to the point, like, I loved learning about it, because it was science, it was physics and geometry and all that stuff and mechanics. But once you learn all the ins and outs, every piano is the same 10,000 to 11,000 parts.
And that's still a lot of parts.
But it's just so repetitive that I just couldn't see myself doing it. I mean, it was like Groundhog's Day, day in and day out. Just like a very standard repair that you do on a piano. You're basically calibrating all the moving parts. It's 1,500 separate adjustments that have to be within very small tolerances. I got my arms out in front of me all day long, and so it was hard on my back, which I've injured a few times. But it really I'm creative. I like things to change. And so, it just, when I realized it was going to be just the same thing day in and day out, I decided to get out of it, which was hard to do too. You know what I mean? I had devoted 4 years of my life to it and came all the way up here from Utah to Washington. Some things just aren't for some people.
Okay.
And so I went back to my first love, so to speak, woodworking. And that's what got me, that's what got me into pianos in the first place. And, not to toot my own horn, but I'm a pretty decent woodworker. I've done some tables and stuff in the past, and I'm very proud of my skills as they've developed. And Annie, about what was it, in 2016, she bought me a lathe for my birthday. And I've hardly turned that thing off since.
So I've got to ask, this is, you know, pure ignorance on my part.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I think, you know, I think of woodworking tools. I think of power tools. I think of safety. Mm-hmm. And here you are, you're blind. How do you navigate your studio when you're doing this stuff?
Well, I have a very visual memory. I have spatial awareness skills that I've had lots of like mobility professionals and stuff tell me they've never seen anybody with my kind of spatial awareness. And part of that comes from, I imagine my surroundings. I always imagine my surroundings. And so I picture the arm of the couch that's next to me, or I picture the table that's across the room because I know it's there. And I still have, it's such a visual layout that I can walk around almost as if I had vision in a familiar place. And that's, so when I'm in my shop, I just know where everything is. I mean, to a certain point, I misplace tools pretty often, but
I was going to say, I misplace stuff all the time. And yeah. I'm like, you must be very disciplined to put everything back in this.
To tell the truth, I'm not. And there are certain things, yes, like my measuring tools, which literally are the only adaptive equipment in my whole shop. Those have their own special bag that they go into all the time.
Let me interject. So you're saying that the rest of your tools are
just
the same tools that I could go buy if I went to, you know, woodworking store.
Yeah. Yeah. They're okay. just standard tools. Cause I mean, a saw is a saw and there's really not many ways around that, you know? So really the main difference between sighted and blind woodworkers is the way that we measure. You know, really when it comes down to it, sighted or blind, if you follow the safety rules, you'll be okay. You know, and I am religious about safety. Okay. I've taught myself a lesson a time or two. the first bowl I ever made on the lathe. And I mean, I felt kind of dumb too, because at this point I was actually an experienced turner. I had done some pretty big stuff, but it was all like spindle type stuff, like chair leg type stuff, which is a totally different animal than making a bowl. A bowl is, it's a much bigger block of wood. You have to, there's just different geometry involved. And I had my finger in a place that it shouldn't have been, resting on top of the chisel, and it dug into the wood and I smashed my finger between a part that's called the tool rest and the side of the chisel. And ow. I'm talking 11 stitches, 8 ooh, weeks to heal. And I left a trail of blood like a wounded cowboy in a John Wayne movie all the way to the back door. It was,
oh no.
Yeah, it was pretty intense, but luckily full recovery on the finger and okay, a valuable lesson learned. Don't put your finger there, you idiot.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, but like I was saying, you know, the only adaptive tool is my measuring device called a rotomatic.
So explain what that is.
Okay. Basically, it's a bolt. It's a finely machined bolt with a wide rectangular shaped nut on it. And it's machined so that it's flat on top and bottom as you run down the length of it. And okay, on one side of that, it's got a raised tab every half inch. And then every rotation of that wide rectangular shaped nut is 1/16 of an inch. And then the nut itself is 1 inch by 5/8 and 1/4 inch thick to do quick measurements. But I've done cuts accurate down to 1/32 of an inch on the table saw with that, using that device to set it up. So, and it's literally, it's a finely machined bolt. That is all it is. It's as simple as it can possibly be, but that unlocks the entire craft of woodworking for me.
That's amazing. That's wow. Okay.
And there's some out there that are way more expensive, way more complicated, but nowhere near as accurate.
So it's just, so let me see if I got this. Okay. So you're telling me it's basically a bolt that was machined to a very fine tolerance.
Yeah.
That allows you to measure within a 32nd of an inch.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah. I love it. And there are other, you know, like I said, there's a couple other out there, like a talking tape measure, and those are ridiculously inaccurate. They can only get you down to like within an eighth of an inch.
Okay.
And that's like, I mean, when you're doing fine woodworking, an eighth of an inch off is as good as a mile. I mean, you'll throw off your entire design, all your dimensions. It'll, you know, it'll cause you some serious problems. The next best is a click rule, which is really the best step down from what I've got, which is basically, think of the finely machined bolt that I am describing inside of a body that has like a ratchet thing, so that as you click it out, it goes. But that's, you still don't have the rock solid, you know,
accuracy.
But
all right.
Yeah. But otherwise, you know, I've got a miter saw that I use quite a bit, and mostly I don't use my table saw much because as a turner, I don't make very large cuts. So I've got a nice sliding miter saw that allows me to, I set up the cut, I clamp the wood down, and then I never have to have my hands anywhere near it while I'm using the saw.
Okay.
So that's very nice. And then I've got a Central Machinery Harbor Freight lathe.
Okay.
And it's a beast. Everybody, people always, oh, a Central Machinery, a Harbor Freight lathe. And I get it. It's pretty hit or miss. It can be anyway. But that lathe, I have thousands of hours of operating time. I'm talking like 5,000 to 6,000 hours. I've done pieces on there that when they first started out as the block that's called a blank. It weighed probably 35 pounds and it was able to turn that and was 12 or actually that one was 13 by 7 inches. So just, you know, big salad bowl size, like family salad bowl size.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So
what?
Oh, go ahead.
What got you started on the online, the social media, the TikTok and the YouTube and all of that? That is
all Annie. 100% okay. Annie. Like I said, I'm really not tech savvy at all. And, you know, a lot of times I'll take pictures of my nose hairs instead of what I want.
I'll let you know a little secret. We all do that.
Yeah. But actually, even Annie is such an excellent videographer. She's even taught me, so I can do the videos now. There's been several that I've done so far to help her out.
What are you using when you're filming these?
Just
are you
an
using
iPhone.
An iPhone? Okay.
Yeah. Just an iPhone. Okay. So she does all of that stuff. I mean, when we first got together, she was already really heavily involved in the community. And so that, you know, translated to Facebook. And so she's really, and I had always been really anti-Facebook. I don't want to put all my stuff out there for everybody to see. And just, Annie and I got together and I decided to get one and actually recontacted with some old friends and stuff. So that was cool. And then when we first got together, I was still working on pianos because obviously we met at the school. And in 2016 is when I really switched over to the woodworking. And I mean, up until then, obviously Annie was promoting me too. She ran a fundraiser for me to get all my piano rebuilding tools and raised $16,000 for me. Got me a news interviews, more than, you know, several news interviews for that. And, so I did the piano thing. And something that's nice about that is most everything I bought, except for the very specialized tools, are just woodworking tools. So that worked out great. So she really, she got me out there on Facebook, and she had bought me my lathe, and I made, her mom actually requested a small, like, dresser top jewelry dish. So I made her just a little simple little jewelry dish, and Andy posted it on Facebook, and there, within a day, there were like 14 different people that said, I want one. I want to buy one. So that's pretty much what started the professional side of it.
Wow. And okay.
So we, and it was quite a while before we actually picked up TikTok. Like I said, that was just a year ago that we really did that. And, up until then, you know, she advertised us on Facebook and YouTube and stuff like that. And we did, mainly, like, art fair type shows.
Okay.
So we, and that was pretty hit or miss, honestly. We did, we would do lots and lots of shows, and usually it would work out to maybe four or five of them that were actually worth it, if even that. We, and then there'd be a bunch of duds in between where we wouldn't sell anything sometimes. And, it was, it, so it, it was enough to keep us going, but at the same time, she was working a job and doing all that stuff. So that, that was pretty tough on her. But, and we started doing, I actually started doing some public speaking stuff, and that also was through Facebook, through Annie's postings on Facebook. We actually started off as, we were going to elementary schools and teaching blind and disability awareness, such as, you know, don't just assume a blind person or a disabled person needs help. Ask them if they need help. Don't just shout out random directions to a blind person that's on the sidewalk. They don't necessarily need those, and that's not the way to do it in the first place. So we would do that. And then that translated into like inspirational speaking. I would tell my story and just kind of share what I do and that kind of thing. And that I actually started doing talks at middle schools and high schools. And that was really, really rewarding. I mean, it was so awesome to really like. There were a lot of kids that reached out and told me how much it really meant to them. And that's why I do it. That really, that just, it made everything just, I don't know how to describe it. It was just the most rewarding thing. And TikTok is really big with that age group. And so we decided we wanted to, you know, I mean, at least have some sort of a glimpse into it. And so we started doing TikTok. And the first video we ever did on TikTok was, we call it cooking with the lights out, because I love to bake and stuff like that. And so we did a video where I demonstrated how to make a peach pie, and it was so much fun. And then it just kind of, it slowly went from there. Like I started doing some more of the videos about like telling my story and just, you know, like saying to people, be happy and, you know, love those around you kind of thing.
Right.
And then we would show our art sometimes. And then that's kind of how it turned into a sort of a business venture at the same time. But it really is more about the human connection for us on TikTok. That is so amazing to be able to contact people all around the world. And we've communicated with people all over the place. We did some live ones where all the way from Mongolia to Australia and in between. Yeah. So,
well, I'd like to take this opportunity. And if you would, I'd really like to hear more of your story.
Okay.
Because I know some of it, and I think it's, if you're willing to share it, I think it's a really powerful story.
I would love to. So I'll start when I was 16, and leading up to that was kind of I had a hard time, and it wasn't because, you know, like, my parents or anything like that. I had a lot of anxiety, and I really kind of felt like people didn't like accept me or value me. And that was really, I was just kind of making that up mostly, but I never really reached out at all either. And, you know, so that led up to when I was 16, I attempted suicide, and luckily it only took my sight and my sense of smell, and it didn't damage my brain at all or anything like that. And I was able to make a 100% recovery. To tell the truth, I think it rearranged some things. I'm such a different and better person now that I really believe I'm supposed to be blind. That was it. I don't know how else to describe it. I really feel like I'm supposed to be blind, and that's how I'm able to do what I do in life. And I like a month after I got out of the hospital, I changed the rear wheel bearings on my old car by myself. I had helped my dad do it when I was a kid, and I remembered every bit of it. So I did it.
Wow.
I feel very blessed because of that. I know that is very rare that, you know, something like that happens and then a 100% recovery is made. You know, I feel very fortunate for that, very blessed. And it, you know, I mean, it was hard too. I turned to drugs quite a bit. And, you know, for several years, I, you know, drifted between sober and using. And when I graduated high school, I basically just took off. I moved back to the little town I grew up in, which was just a terrible idea. It was a wide patch in the road, in the middle of nowhere in Colorado, and there was nothing but trouble for me there. And I got back into drugs really heavily. I even got into trouble with the law. I got into quite a bit of trouble, which luckily just in 2019, December 2019, I was able to get a pardon from the governor of Colorado.
Oh, wow.
And that was, and it happened in 2001. So that was amazing. I mean, a whole other conversation is that process needs to be a lot easier for people, but that's a whole other issue. But I finally was able to get that monkey off my back. But so let's go back to Colorado. And this was in my early 20s. I was 19 years old when that happened. And so I'm in Colorado. I'm on probation. I'm still doing drugs really heavily. And I'm living in these like really sketchy boarding houses and stuff. And I ended up getting really sick, like a massive sinus infection that, I mean, it got so bad that they actually had to remove my forehead bone and replace it with a prosthetic plate. And
what?
Yeah, they said they don't understand how or why I survived that without just being totally incapacitated for the rest of my life.
Wow.
Yeah. And they said the only thing I can think of is the scar tissue from when I attempted suicide protected my brain. And at that point I decided maybe I should reach out for a little bit of help. And so I reached out to my parents, who they'd always been there for me, but I had refused their help because I didn't, you know, I wanted to do drugs and be a rebel and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I was really heavy into meth and cocaine.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, mostly meth and cocaine. So that was pretty bad. I mean, and a lot of people don't make it out of that either. You know, I feel really grateful because of that too. And so they took me in, and through their help and in my own stubborn determination and I was able to get off meth totally, and I was able to get off probation. And, you know, I was starting to get my life cleaned up. I was starting to come around again. So I decided to go to a vocational rehab and try to get a job. And part of their program, so to speak, was they had this 2-month like independent living course. And they did that mainly because a lot of their clients were like kids out of high school that they were kind of trying to learn how to live on their own and stuff. And so some of the classes were like cooking and cleaning, Braille and mobility, but they also had woodworking. And that's where I really started to woodwork. I had always been interested in it. And trust me, I thought they were kind of nuts when I first heard about it. A bunch of blind people in there using saws and whatnot.
So you do see the, I don't know what's the word I'm searching for here. You just, okay.
Yeah. It's surprising how many blind woodworkers there are out there. It really is. I had no idea. But they also, the teacher there, Chris Hathaway, he is one of my best friends. We still talk on a weekly basis, you know, and he retired and he knew how to teach people. Like, I've never seen somebody that was so intuitive on what someone needed and what they could do. And when you're working with saws and blind people, you better know what you're talking about, you know. And so he actually retired not long after I started attending the school, a few months in. And I wasn't really having much success finding employment because, like I said before, where my skills lie are places that most people wouldn't, you know, a blind person is a liability, you know, in a wood shop or a mechanic shop or something like that. So they weren't really having a lot of success helping me. So basically he retired and invited me to come work in his wood shop because I had a project going. And for the next few years, I would just hang out with him and woodwork. So I just really refined my skills. And then after a few years, you know, I was starting to get itchy again, you know. I'm just living with my parents, no job or anything. And so he had told me about the piano school up here in Washington, in Vancouver. So I decided to check it out. It was right up my alley. And I, you know, moved up here, and the rest is history.
History, as they say.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And it was quite the road to get here, but I learned everything I needed to. And I still wouldn't give up the years in the town I grew up in. You know, the years that I was talking about with the drug use and the trouble with the law and stuff, because that, it gave me a wider perspective on the world. It gave me a deeper understanding of, I don't know, like just living, I guess. And so I wouldn't pass it up. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't want those memories to go away, so to speak, because some are good, most are bad, but they taught me a lot.
Right. They contributed to the fabric of who you are today as a person.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. That's, well, you've certainly overcome more than most of us would, I think, be able to do.
Thank you.
It sounds daunting the way you've described it, and I'm sure you're being kind here too. So, so congratulations, and I love the fact I was watching one of your talks, and it was that you're exceptionally engaging, and I'm really glad that you're out there spreading positivity.
Thank you.
And encouragement for people. I think that's wonderful. And please continue.
Thank you very
much. Not that you need my permission to, but, you know, please continue.
Thank you. Well, yeah. Having me on your podcast, you are helping me. This is, you know, you're getting,
well, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So. Well, see, the beautiful thing for us is that, you know, the state, and I'll be fair. I mean, I've lived here all my life. Uh-huh. I've traveled the U.S. fairly extensively, but I've lived here all my life, and I'm biased. And there's great things in Colorado. There's great things in Rhode Island. Let's be fair. It's not like Washington State has it all locked up, but we do have we have amazing stories in the state of people who are doing amazing things like yourself. Just interesting things going on statewide. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of fun to go figure out what's that next conversation for us going to be, who's next, you know? And it's always, and you and I've had our challenges getting connected for a couple of reasons. You know, we've been trying to do this for a couple, 3 weeks, and it just, one thing, just my world just did not cooperate with that.
Sometimes it just happens.
You and Annie have been awesome and so patient. So, but I'd like to, she's great to communicate with. I mean, I can tell you that as far as somebody who communicates and schedules, she's top shelf.
She's got social media down pat. She really knows that stuff. And she's an amazing artist, too. She really, whenever she goes at an art medium, she goes for it and really just excels. She even did some fiber art family portraits. They were a mix of ink and fiber art.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. For a whole family. Interesting. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So it's pretty awesome.
I would like to talk. I'm on your, as I typically do on these interviews, I'm on your website at the same time we're having a conversation. So I'm like scrolling around looking at things and I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about some of your woodworking that's currently all out of stock, but looks like
we restock every Monday. We try to restock every Monday.
Is it Claro wood?
Yeah, Claro.
What is Claro wood? I've never heard of that.
I honestly, this is the first time I've ever heard of it too. A furniture maker from San Francisco sent me up a bunch of small wood rounds, and it's a mix of Claro and French walnut.
Okay.
And I like Claro. It's a dense, pretty hard wood. It's harder than walnut, definitely, but not quite as hard as like oak or hickory, somewhere between the two.
Okay.
Probably like a nice hard maple, about that same density and stuff. And it's really nice wood to work with, but I'll turn anything really. I've gotten wood before, this mahogany called Apatong, that they use it to make the beds of semi trailers. That's hard stuff.
What is your favorite wood to work with? What is there? I mean, maybe that's probably project specific.
I do have some favorites. Sapele. It's an African mahogany that is just delightful to work with. It just carves like butter, but it's still hard enough to make like a mortar and pestle out of. I actually make a lot of those. Sapele, Padauk, it's an African wood, and Yellowheart, which I believe is South American. And actually Yellowheart, all of the responsibly harvestable groves are all played out, which is sad. Definitely. I always make sure that the wood I buy is responsibly harvested. I do not want to contribute to deforestation or anything like that. I mean, but I also do want to use the beautiful hardwoods. And so the place I like to go to, they are definitely, responsible about that. And right now I have basically the last couple of pieces of Yellowheart I'll ever get my hands on. So I'm coming up with some pretty good stuff for it.
All right. One of the things on your shopping cart page, and it's, at the time of this, it is out of stock, is a Claro Wood smartphone amplifier.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, the design, I came up with that myself from scratch. Like, I know that there's other amplifiers out there, but the ones I make are my own particular design that I developed from scratch. And, basically you put your phone in it, it props it up. It's like a special shaped bowl with a curving over rim, kind of a dome in the bottom and a post that sticks up in the middle for you to prop your phone up. And
right.
from what people have told me, it basically doubles the volume. It's about a 50% increase or so. And I'm very, very proud of them. Like I said, I came up with it from scratch, and I've been making them for 2 years now.
Okay.
And I love it. To tell the truth, it's the one thing I don't mind making over and over and over again. It's because it's different than a bowl. A bowl is whatever it ends up being. You know, I pretty much have complete control over that. But those amplifiers, they have very specific specifications that they have to meet to perform the way that they do. And so it's fun to, it's almost like machining a part instead of making a bowl.
All right. Yeah. I'm looking at this. You've also got a small French walnut bowl. That's beautiful. That really is beautiful. Do you make those larger as well?
Yeah, I make everything from little 3-inch diameter, 1-inch tall jewelry dishes all the way up to, I've done a 13-by-7-inch salad bowl.
Wow. Okay. How long did that take you? Because that was, you were talking about that earlier. That was like 35 pounds of
wood. Let's see here. That one took me about 4 days it was a 3-day glue process. And then it took me about 9 hours of carving or so.
Wow.
That one was a dedication.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah. The pattern I did, I basically had to make panels and then cut those panels up, re-glue them together in a different pattern into other panels, flatten those out, glue them together with other panels, and then have my block to turn.
Wow. Okay.
So it gets pretty complicated. It was about 30 different pieces of wood.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know very little about woodworking, mainly because I'm not allowed to touch hand tools, or especially power tools. There's a rule in our house, and I'm not allowed.
Well,
if it wasn't for my wife Edie, I don't know that anything would ever get fixed, because I don't know when into the hammer to pick up. I'm lucky once in a while. I'm kind of kidding, but not really. If he came over, you'd go, yeah, he's not kidding.
We all have our strengths and weaknesses,
right? And that's exactly. That I'm perfectly okay with that.
Yeah.
But also, you guys are doing cards and prints and paintings and calendars.
Yes.
Tell us more about that too.
Okay, so that's cool. All Annie's stuff. She is an extremely accomplished artist, and so she's got cards. She even does cards, notebooks, even with her art on the front of it, bookmarks, calendars. And she's got those always available on the shop. Mm-hmm. And my stuff, it's a little harder to keep that in stock all the time. But, so she has just piles of stuff that's awesome. And
this is some really beautiful work here.
Yeah. And she started to sculpt recently too. Just on Monday, she had this bowl that we posted, and we do collaboration projects. So mm-hmm. I'll turn a bowl that will have cracks in it or something like that. And so she'll paint that bowl, and that way it's not wasted. And so she did one where she actually sculpted a frog with a fishing pole sitting on the edge of the bowl with his fishing line down in the bowl. And she had water painted in the bottom of the bowl and a little fish on the end of the line that was sculpted.
Yeah. I'm looking at that right now. Yeah. It's very, very nice. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
So that was a bowl that had a structural defect that would keep it from being able to be a bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It had some cracks.
And so by painting it, then you can seal over it. And so, I mean, not that you're going to use this as a bowl, or now it just becomes an art piece.
Yeah, correct? Yeah, exactly. Okay. Then it just becomes a collaboration art piece between the two of us. Yeah,
it's very, very, I like that one a lot.
And it's great that, you know, like how cool is it that a visual artist and a blind more three-dimensional artists got together and got married, you know?
Right. Wow. That's a cool story too.
Yeah.
What else? I mean, what else can you share with us that you we'll ramp this one down and I'll say, okay, so what else would you like to share that you think we'd like to hear? Mm-hmm. And then why don't you tell us where we can find you online and all of that stuff?
Okay.
So,
like I've said before too, she's not just an artist. She is our business. I just make stuff. You know, she does all the posting, all the, you know, on the store, all the, you know, emails, everything. She does all that stuff. So I want to make sure that people understand how vital she is to our whole thing, you know, because a lot of times she gets kind of lost in the, you know, in the crowd, so to speak, or, you know, and I just want to make sure that everybody knows they would not even know who I was without her.
Right.
Yeah. But, and she's my biggest fan, really. And we have such a wonderful relationship. Just, it could not be stronger. Couldn't be better. So I found my person. We found our people. We really, you know, lucked out, so to speak. We waited for just the right time. And I guess also, you know, like another message I want to get out there is let those that you love and look up to and have helped you, let them know. There's so many times that, like, we just kind of think they know, or I don't know. It's hard to say, but just that little bit, a couple of words of, hey, you're awesome. You helped me out at this time, or I love you because you're there for me, or just whatever. Those words can mean so much to somebody. And that's a message I like to get out there. It's just, you know, the sun, there's a line in a Blues Traveler song that says, the sun always shines, even though it might not get to the ground.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that.
That's a great band, too.
Oh, yeah. Blues Traveler is great. That harmonica he plays, man. Can't believe how that guy played that thing.
Well, so I got to, okay, this is totally like, welcome to, as I describe these episodes, like, welcome to a Grateful Dead show. We're going to go meander around now.
Okay.
When you were living in Colorado, did you ever go to Red Rocks?
No, I never really went to that kind of stuff.
Okay.
All my friends did though. Okay. I hung out with.
I've never been, and I've heard that it's a magical spot.
Yeah.
We're lucky here. We've got the Gorge Amphitheater is a beautiful venue too.
But yeah, we went out to, there's a place, a venue called Edgefield close by here. We saw Beck. Like 2014. That show was incredible.
Really?
Yeah, okay. It was absolutely amazing.
So who else? So what else musically are you interested in? What do you like musically?
Boy, I like practically a little bit of everything. I mean, some of my favorites. Let's see here. Like I said, Blues Traveler, Tool, Perfect Circle, Knife Party, Ellis Paul, Alicia Keys, like just about anything you can think of. If I like it, I play it. Ween.
Okay.
Yeah.
All kinds of
Primus has been one of my favorites right from the start. I mean, right since back in 94, I've been listening to those guys.
All right. Okay. All right. I love it. It wouldn't be an episode if we didn't go completely off, you know, they're scripted, but if we don't go completely off script, it wouldn't just be one of my shows.
When you described it as a Grateful Dead show, that makes me feel really comfortable because all of my friends in Colorado, all my hippie buddies and stuff, not the meth ones, but the good friends,
right.
You know,
right.
I listen to so much Grateful Dead around them that there's only a couple of their songs I can even handle anymore.
Well, see, the thing is about when you went to a Dead show, mm-hmm. they were either magical or they were awful. Let's be honest. There were really bad performances, yeah. And I've been to them. But when something clicked and the art really was flowing through the band that day, mm-hmm. You never knew what to expect, yeah, and but it was always an enjoyable journey. Yeah. So,
well, and it's not that the music is bad so much as I just heard the same songs a billion times.
Oh, come on now. You can never get tired of the Grateful Dead.
Well, Sugar Magnolias, I love that. I still listen to that tune all the time.
It's a great song. Yeah. So, well, on that note, why don't you share with us where people can find you and Annie online, and we'll put some links in the show notes so people can click on them easy. But
all righty,
why don't you tell us?
Well, you can find me if you put in the Blind Woodsman. That'll take you to all of our social media. It'll take you to our store and everything, YouTube, TikTok, everything. Just the Blind Woodsman.
And you're on Patreon.
Yeah, we're on Patreon. And thank you a million times to all our patrons. We couldn't do it without you. It's amazing. Also Furnace Studios. That's FURNISSSTUDIOS. So there's three S's there in the middle.
Three S's. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, John, thank you so much for being on here. I've enjoyed it immensely. And you do some amazing work, which I'm really happy to do our little part of the showcasing. And you are an inspiration. So I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. And I really appreciate you having me on. It's wonderful to be able to share my story. And I just really love talking to people in general. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome.
Join us next time for another episode of the Exploring Washington State podcast.